Chapter 14. The Heisman. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Matthew 5:14. The following week, we played Vanderbilt, who made the mistake of showing up that day. The coaches had helped us to mentally and emotionally turn the page on the previous week and had also prepared a good game plan for us. We were able to spread the ball out more to others. Because of the possibility that Percy Harvin might not play, the coaches had to game plan for that possibility. Even with as great a player as Percy was for us, the tendency is to key on one person too much, which doesn't always make that person or the team better. We managed the ball very well in the Vanderbilt game, in both the turnover category and in making the necessary plays when we had to. Those are the things we needed to continue to do better as an offense. My coaching career, if I ever have one, started that day. We had a third down and 3 yards to go for a first down early in the game and deep in Vandy's end of the field. As we huddled on the sidelines, they called the play, but I didn't really like the call. How about if we make a naked bootleg and then pass to, wideout, Jared Faison, I suggested. Coach Meyer wasn't sure it would work, but he said he trusted me and go ahead and go for it. They came out in exactly the coverage I had a hunch they were going to run. Faison was wide open, made the catch, and walked into the end zone for a touchdown. Coach and I laughed about it afterward, and I gave him a hard time telling him, "This coaching stuff isn't that hard. I like this gig. Maybe there's a coaching job for me at Florida one day." But whether you're talking about being a coach or being a player, the thing that's hard is leadership. In the past, I have worked at casting a vision and modeling appropriate behavior, but this season, I was faced with the challenge of getting through to guys who were wired differently than I was. I had to keep finding new ways to motivate others. South Carolina was up next. They were a good team with talented players, and we had the distraction of Percy Harvin all week. Will he play or won't he? He was having migraine headaches, and the coaches were putting together two game plans again. South Carolina had almost beaten us each of the previous 2 years, and we definitely weren't going to take them lightly. They had a good defense, and they could score points, especially if the old ball coach had anything to say about it. Speculation surrounded us all week. How bad was Percy's illness? It went right up to the last minute. We flew to Columbia without him, but there was still a hope that he could either be on another flight or someone was going to drive him up later in time to play. The coaches were concerned with not only his health, but with having to develop an alternate game plan without him, simply because he was such an explosive player. As for me, I told Coach during our usual Friday night talk, he and I always sat down every Friday night at the hotel to discuss the upcoming game, that we'd be fine. We'd spread the ball around more to others, and that whoever we had with us in Columbia would be sufficient to win this game. After our talk, I got treatment on my right shoulder that night from AP, Anthony Pass, our head trainer. It was getting better. The inflammation was going down, and AP was doing ultrasound on my shoulder. He had applied the ultrasound cream to my shoulder and then had draped a towel over it while he was working on it. I wasn't paying any attention to what was happening with my shoulder, but instead I was looking away and talking to other guys who were in our training area. After a while, my shoulder started tingling and then hurting. I was surprised at how effective the ultrasound felt that night. AP pulled the towel back and looked stricken when he saw my shoulder. He just started saying, "I'm so sorry," over and over. At that point, I saw it. There was a bad burn on my shoulder. It looked like some skin had melted away. It really started hurting about then, but I could tell AP felt terrible about it, so I said, "It's all right, man. It's not a big deal." But I knew when I put the shoulder pads on the next night, it was going to be a rough night. I certainly have made sure to remind him over the years what he did to my shoulder that night in Colombia, and how dressing and playing the next day with the sunburn he'd laid on me was no picnic. And whenever I had the chance, I would make sure that anyone and everyone within listening distance heard the story about the trainer-inflicted sunburn. He did so much to keep me healthy and on the field for my career that it was fun to give him grief over this accident. In the end, Percy wasn't able to play. It was an ESPN Saturday night game. We always loved Saturday night television games, except this one turned out to be one of the coldest games I ever played in my college career. Somewhere around game time, it was freezing. Other than the temperature, there was a really good atmosphere, a little bit like the Louisiana State game, but not quite as intense or personally vindictive. Still, their fans knew that without our teams blocking a field goal at the end of the previous year's game, they would have kept us from winning the national championship. They were giving me a hard time during pregame, and I loved it. Being hassled always gets my competitive juices flowing. Some guys prefer home games, and I do love a home crowd too. However, there's something about quieting a noisy road crowd that gets me going. I had a great feeling about that game, and I had a lot of friends and family who made the trip up to support us. On the opening drive, I scored on a third down play, plowing into the end zone through another good-sized hole our line had opened up, and then ending the run on a pretty big collision, too. It was one of my favorite plays that game, in no small part because my shoulder held up, despite both the separation and the burn. We went up quickly, 7-0. On their possession, they turned the ball over, and I threw a touchdown pass to Jared Faison, a fade route into the corner of the end zone that made the score 14-0. From that point on, the game turned into a pretty good little shootout, with each of us scoring in turn. Aaron Hernandez had his coming out party that night by having his biggest game of his freshman season. We had a chance to build a bigger lead on them, but couldn't do it, and instead fumbled the ball and kept them in the game. We went into the locker room at halftime up 27-14, but they were still in the game. In the second half, we stayed with our game plan and kept executing. I was so into what we were doing as a unit that I wasn't paying much attention to the score. In the fourth quarter, we needed a separation score to seal the win. On fourth down and goal to go, I ran it, smashed into two guys on the goal line, and piled over them to get into the end zone for the touchdown. We knew we had it wrapped up. Finally, we added another touchdown on a pass that I threw to Bubba Caldwell for a 51-31 win. It was a good night for all of us. I later reminded Coach that I'd told him we'd step up even without Percy. I think it was a good growing experience for us as a team to be on the road without one of our best players against a very good team and to win. Not to mention they also had Coach Spurrier on the other sideline, who always seems to figure out a way to beat people. Their best receiver, Kenny McKinley, had a big night in receptions and yards gained, but our defense stepped up, and we were fortunate to keep him out of the end zone. After the game, a reporter asked me how it felt to score all those touchdowns. I knew we'd had a big night, but didn't realize I'd had a hand in 7 touchdowns, 5 rushing and 2 passing. South Carolina was the game that probably did as much to influence the Heisman voters as any game we played that year, but I didn't realize it at the time. People were talking about it, but it really didn't enter my mind. I didn't have any control over it, so I stayed focused on the next game. South Carolina was quite a game for all of us, and thanks to the rest of the guys on the team, for me personally. The next week, we continued on a roll as cohesive units on both offense and defense, and beat Florida Atlantic in a game that was a tune-up for the Florida State Seminoles' visit to our place the next week. One interesting note from the FAU game is that both starting quarterbacks, Rusty Smith and I, attend First Baptist of Jacksonville. They played us tough, but in the end, we won the game. Percy missed the game again. But Percy was back for the next one, and FSU was talking their usual brand of trash all week. Of course, I was always ready to play Florida State, but having their senior weak side linebacker, Geno Hayes, quoted as saying, "Tim Tebow is going down. We can go out there and shatter his dream," helped fuel the fire for all of us. My dream, really, was to beat FSU. Badly. For as much as they were trash-talking, we forgot that they were coming in at 7-4, having finished in the middle of the pack in the Atlantic Coast Conference standings. By the time of the pregame warm-ups, they were dancing around. At least they never danced on the F in the center of our field. There were several of us watching for that. Especially after Georgia's shenanigans on the goal line after their first score a month earlier. On our very first drive, the referee called a false start. But we had already started the play, so I continued and rolled out to my left before they blew the whistle. After they blew it, Geno Hayes slapped me in the face mask and then headbutted me after we had all clearly stopped and was in my face, talking trash with spit flying everywhere. Not a good idea. At all. I had started out irritated with them and him, and now I was playing angry. The next play was a 3rd-and-16. It was supposed to be a pass play, but nobody was open when I looked around, so I tucked the ball under my arm and ran for a long gain and a 1st down. Oh, and by the way, during the run, I made FSU's trash-talking, face-mask-slapping, and head-butting linebacker Geno Hayes miss. As much as I would never find myself rooting for FSU, that university and its football program have turned out some fine players and people through the years. People like running back Warwick Dunn and linebacker Derek Brooks, both of whom I have the utmost respect for and have looked to as role models for how to live life. Warwick Dunn bought houses for families who needed them but couldn't afford them. Derek Brooks helped children in so many ways to be the best they could be and took them on trips to stimulate their thirst for learning. It's hard for me to imagine either Derek Brooks or Warwick Dunn saying or doing some of the things we experienced that day from some of those FSU players. Although the score was still 0-0, the game was over at that point. Trust me, we knew it was over. We just kept playing for the fun of it. We were driving, and on a play-action pass from their 22-yard line, I stood up after faking the handoff and saw that their defensive end had come free, unblocked, and had me in his sights. I saw him at the very last second and ducked, taking a quick look at him as he flew over my back, and then I spun out and ran it in for a touchdown. I vividly remember running right and then cutting back to the center of the field at the 10 just to run over one of their defenders who was there. I did, and finished the run into the end zone. It's not often that I shy away from contact, and there are some games where I just like to go right at people. This was one of those games, and as I scored, I thought, this is going to be a great day. On defense, we were flying around and hitting people. We stopped them, got the ball back, and drove down the field. I hit Lewis Murphy in stride in the back right corner of the end zone. He did a great job getting a foot down and in the end zone for the score. That was probably one of my best passes that year, and Lewis was a big part of that. We went up 14-3. Then it was a bit of a back-and-forth battle, except that our defense was keeping them out of the end zone, making their only option a string of field goal attempts. On the next drive, I threw an out pass to Murphy, and although the ball got away from me a little, Murph made a slick, reaching one-handed catch. We finished the drive and went up by a score of 21-6. In the second quarter, we drove down the field again and ran a Mickey, our renamed power, up the middle from the 5-yard line, and while I was stiff-arming one guy in the face mask at the 1-yard line, and with my right hand pressed against his face mask, another guy missed me and hit my right hand, pinning it between his and the other's helmet. I felt something crack, but only as I was getting up and celebrating a new lead, 28-6. I celebrated with the team, but didn't tell anyone about my hand. While we were on defense, AP came over to me, grabbed my hand, and saw my reaction. He wanted to examine my hand further, but he knew I wasn't coming out of the game anyway, so instead he sprayed a cooling spray on it. That stuff was great. The marvels of modern medicine, as it kept me comfortable and able to stay in the game. Every time I'd come over to the sideline, AP would spray it again to give me relief. Percy and I were able to do whatever we wanted on offense, and Lewis Murphy, Bubba Caldwell, and our backs had good games as well. It was really cool. When I threw a touchdown pass to Bubba Caldwell to make it 38-12, Bubba threw the ball up into the crowd. Farther, it seemed, than I had thrown it to him. I was able to finish the game, and we dominated it in all aspects, ending up scoring some more and eventually winning 45-12. The last 4 minutes on the field, as we were running the clock out, the stands were full as the whole crowd was still there in full force and doing their thing, going just a little bit crazy. There were guys there dressed in Heisman shirts and carrying Heisman signs. The buzz seemed to be increasing about that award with each passing game, and the Florida State game was a big game to be able to play really well as a team and individually, as so many of us did. It was a wonderful feeling and night to enjoy. After the game, we went to get an X-ray of my hand and found out that it was, in fact, a complete break. I asked AP what the stuff was that he'd been spraying on it and learned that it was some sort of antiseptic, like Bactine or something. "But what about what it did for the..." AP grinned. "Nope. No medical value for breaks at all." And then he laughed. He laughed way too long as far as I was concerned. He really enjoyed that story. I suppose it was a bit of payback for my telling the trainer-induced sunburn story so many times. They threw a tiny wrap over my hand to keep the outside world from knowing it was broken. When they were done, we hopped into my dad's Altima and drove over to the UF track where we had our traditional family tailgate gathering with the Heavener family, good friends of my parents from their college days. My family figured out that something was not right, however, and asked what happened to my hand. They were surprised to hear that I'd broken it in the second quarter. And so I had a night hanging out with friends and family. They kept asking if I'd rather go out and see what was going on in Gainesville that night and celebrate the big win. I preferred a quiet evening. For that quiet evening, we ended up hanging out in my buddy's apartment, playing catchphrase until late, watching the West Coast college football games. The next morning, a group of us headed to the Cracker Barrel at the intersection near I-75 and Archer Road in Gainesville for breakfast. There were probably 8 of us, my 2 brothers, along with Robbie's friend Angel from Miami, a couple of other buddies, and me. The hostess was kind enough to seat us in the back, but before long, someone spotted us. I enjoy interacting with folks a bunch, but sometimes a little privacy is good, because otherwise it gets hard to do just simple things, like eat and talk with family and friends. This was one of those times, as people started coming up one at a time to get my autograph. People were bringing over napkins and whatever they could find. Then people started heading out into the gift area of the restaurant and coming back into the dining room with their bags of goodies and getting in the line that had now formed in that area of the restaurant. We spent the rest of the breakfast signing. And by we, I mean all of us. It was funny, actually. After a few minutes, somebody mistook Robbie for our tight end, Tate Casey, and someone else thought Angel was our punter, Eric Wilbur. For some reason, we never corrected the mistake, and before long, the other seven were signing as Gator players, that they weren't. So, if you've got a signed University of Florida Cracker Barrel mug from 3 days after Thanksgiving 2007, I apologize. At least my signature on the mug is real. When the store sold out all their Gators stuff, the manager excitedly came over to tell me. The crowd died down, and we went to pay for our meal, but the manager pointed to a man in the parking lot and told us that he'd taken care of it. I ran out to him and thanked him and asked him if he wanted anything signed. He didn't. He just wanted to give something to us. He was very gracious and said it was his way of thanking us for being good role models for his grandchildren who were attending the University of Florida. I asked if he wouldn't mind calling my father and telling him that, since it would earn me a dollar. My dad refused to pay me, saying that the character compliment payment program of earlier in our lives had long ago expired. The character thing, though, well, he fully expected that to continue. In fact, I had to run back inside and pay for my meal, even though it had already been paid for. I'm glad I realized that. Otherwise, I was going to have Jeremy Foley, Florida's athletic director, or Jamie McCloskey, UF's associate athletic director for compliance, at my door for taking improper benefits. That was the first game that I remember being in a whirlwind of media interest for a lot of different reasons. It was, of course, the last game of the season before our bowl game. Postseason awards were now on everyone's agenda in college football, and I was blessed to have been included in the consideration for a number of them. I had to go to Orlando for the Home Depot College Football Awards ceremony, and then on to New York the following day for the Heisman Trophy Awards ceremony. As I was flying around to different places for those events, and also to do things for the university, Tennessee was preparing to play in the SEC Championship game in Atlanta. The same Tennessee team we'd beaten 59-20. That was a bit frustrating to watch, as getting to the SEC Championship game was our primary team goal every single year. And with a 5-3 conference record, with losses to Auburn, LSU, and Georgia, that wasn't going to happen that year. The Heisman Trophy Awards ceremony was unlike anything I'd experienced before. I'd never been to New York City, and, of course, our whole family went. We received the invitation on Wednesday, had to go to Orlando on Thursday for the Home Depot College Football Awards ceremony that day, and then the Heisman ceremony was on Saturday. I was excited that my parents, Robbie, Peter, Katie, and Gannon, and their daughter Abby would all be able to make it. But with that late notice, it didn't look as though my sister Christy and her husband Joey would be able to attend, since they were missionaries in Southeast Asia. Uncle Bill Heavener, who, I'm told, is not really my uncle, helped arrange extra tickets for the ceremony, and once he had them, he called Christy and Joey at 4:30 in the morning on Friday, asking if they'd like to come. There were only 3 flights per week from where they were, and the last one left at 7:30 that morning, 3 hours off. There were 2 seats left on the flight, so Christy and Joey made it, along with Claire, their daughter, who was small enough to sit on their laps. Ironically, they beat my parents to New York. We had a great time there as a family. Immediately after arriving, we gathered and Dad prayed that we would be able to let our light shine during the ceremony and throughout the weekend, win or lose. It wouldn't have been the same without my entire family, including Christy and Joey. Coach Howard and Coach Mick were there, and Coach Meyer, too, who had brought his entire family. I certainly view them a part of my family as well. Our loud, gregarious group enjoyed our time with Colt Brennan, Darren McFadden, Chase Daniel, and their families. They were great. At one point on Saturday night, at a reception before the presentation ceremony, we were at the Nokia Theater with 27 prior Heisman Trophy winners. We were pinching ourselves. My dad turned to me and said, "Can you believe that we're even here? And that these guys are actually talking to us?" We had so much fun. And right before the ceremony started, Danny Werfel, who was there as a prior winner, grabbed me, took me into a room in the back, and prayed with me. It was a calming, very special moment with someone I respected, someone who had taken an interest in me since I was in high school. It was a thrill for me, for all of us, to win. I'd spent a great deal of time thinking about what I wanted to say, about my family, my university, and my coaches and team, and my relationship with God. I received some positive comments afterwards from a number of those in attendance about my acceptance speech. I don't think they realized how long I'd been practicing, from my time sharing Christ as a youngster in the Philippines to that first public speaking class with Professor Webster at the University of Florida. That's also the time when more details of the matters surrounding my birth began to come out. Until then, Mom and Dad would simply say that it was a tough pregnancy, and that they, the family, and lots of friends were praying that she would give birth to a healthy son that they would raise as a preacher. In a piece that was to air on ESPN during the Heisman Trophy ceremony, the producer kept asking me questions about the circumstances surrounding my birth, and I told her all I knew, that my parents were told to terminate the pregnancy. She was fascinated with that bit of information, and that detail made it into the Heisman show. As it turned out, a huge viewing audience saw that show, and so the story of my birth ended up generating a great deal of additional interest. It provided a platform on national television for a pro-life message, and now it provides my mom with opportunities to speak to a variety of groups all over the country. The next morning, our group of family members who had gathered in New York to share in this moment headed to the Tavern on the Green restaurant in Central Park on the Upper West Side of Manhattan for brunch. We've seen over the years that, in a group setting, people always call on the minister who might be with them to pray, even though the Lord is thrilled to hear from any of us who call on Him. It's like he or she becomes the designated prayer, the expert. Our family's approach is different. If we're with a group, we always look for the person most likely to be uncomfortable praying in public and ask that person to pray for us. This time, it was my brother-in-law, Gannon Shepherd, who is married to my sister, Katie. Compared to us, he's simply a newer Christian, so we tried to catch him off guard. Strange sense of family humor, I know. Gannon offered a nice prayer, and it was clear he knew he was not talking to us, but to God. But when he asked that the Lord let blessings rain down, my brothers and I cracked up and spent the rest of the weekend calling out to him, or in his presence, "Let it rain!" We were merciless. Maybe not our finest moment, but what are brothers-in-law for, anyway? Later that day, I was asked to sign memorabilia along with the other Heisman winners who were in New York City for that weekend of festivities surrounding the Heisman Trophy Awards ceremony. We found ourselves alone with Herschel Walker, the University of Georgia's great running back. That was one of the most memorable times of my college career, spending time and listening to him reminisce about how he came to attend Georgia and describe some of the highlights of his long and spectacular college and professional football career. It was even more special for us because my dad had always held Herschel out as the weight-free model for me to aspire to be like in my exercise and weight training programs when I was still too young to lift weights. Remember, Herschel Walker became the best player in America by doing push-ups and sit-ups, just like you are. I can still hear him today. I'd heard people say that we had beaten Ohio State the year before because Troy Smith, their quarterback who had won the Heisman, had gained 15 pounds on the banquet speaking circuit afterward. I don't know if that was true or not, but if it was, I was very motivated to not let anything like that happen to me, even though it was very easy to see how it could. I had to take the eating easy because my exercise regimen declined considerably with my travel. I ended up only practicing a little bit for the University of Michigan, the team we would face in the Capital One Bowl in Orlando, because of my broken hand. But I was still catching balls with my left hand and throwing them back with the same hand, of course, in practice. I was also doing the banquet circuit, however. I was a Walter Camp All-American, won the O'Brien Award, where we got to hang out with Troy Aikman, the Maxwell Award, the first of two ESPYs, and won the Sullivan Award as the best amateur athlete, which hadn't been won by a football player since Peyton Manning 10 years earlier. All were terrifically fun, and we made some great friendships. The Barbosas, who administered the Walter Camp Award, stayed in touch and ended up coming down to Gainesville for games the next season. We also received a letter from a family who said that their son had accepted Christ after watching my Heisman acceptance speech. That made all the hectic pace of the travel worth every minute. When we arrived in Orlando for the Capital One Bowl against Michigan, we had a pretty full schedule of events and appearances. Bowl games can be a lot of fun, but they can also wear you out, because the bowl organizers ask for so many appearances. Some days are so tightly scheduled that you go from one appearance to another to another. Mix in a little practice and then wonder why at the end of the day you collapse exhausted in bed. And I still was having trouble practicing. Being hurt and not at full strength was frustrating. That year, the bowl organizers had arranged for our entire team to go to a theme park 2 nights before the game. But I wasn't going to go. I still get dizzy on roller coasters, so I figured it was a good night to stay in my room and get some much-needed rest. Right before they left, though, Officer Stacy called me in my room and said that the head of the amusement park had been calling for the last hour trying to get me there. Officer Stacy didn't want to put any pressure on me, but was simply passing along their request. "They just want to meet you," Stacy said. "They also want you to come in so they can actually advertise to the world and say that you're there. That's it." I have a really hard time turning people down, which, depending on the situation, can either be a good or bad quality. And so I quickly got dressed and went to meet them. But I knew that if they asked me to get on a ride, I'd tell them I get motion sickness. Once I arrived, they were so excited that I was there that, you guessed it, they asked me to please try out their new ride, that it was awesome. I looked to Officer Stacy for help, and he tried, but I finally agreed to go for a ride on it. The head of security and the guy managing the ride that night went with me, and we skipped past all those waiting in line and ended up at the front of the line at the new roller coaster. Even worse was that because of being able to get to the front of the line, we were on the front row of the front car of the new roller coaster, all of which I feared was bound to bring on one of my dizzy spells. I knew this was going to be bad, very bad. As we took off, I was gripping the bar tightly as the roller coaster began by not only taking us up, but also rolling around and around as it climbed. Over and over, around and around, the new, and I'm sure fabulous, ride went for what had to be the longest roller coaster ride ever. When we finally pulled in after enduring the ride, standing there was an array of folks sporting cameras, taking pictures and shouting, "Tebow! Tebow! Tebow!" I said, anxiously, yet as calmly as I could, "Officer Stacy, I'm going to throw up everywhere. The faster you can get me out of here, the better chance the theme park folks don't see me throwing up all over the place after a trip on their new ride." As we walked out, I was throwing up behind my clenched teeth until we got around the corner. I couldn't hold it any longer. I got past the end of the line of people and just took off and sprinted about 20 yards until I got behind the nearest building where I began to throw up. I was trying to catch my breath and my head was spinning like crazy. We stood there for about 20 more minutes and Officer Stacy kept people away from that corner because I'd been throwing up the whole time. It was horrible. The management people came by and apologized for putting me through that, and politely I said, "No, it's okay. It's an unbelievable ride." They poured cold water over me. My shirt was soaked. I was a wreck. I threw up all the way back in the police car. Officer Stacy finally got me back to my hotel room, put me into my bed, and turned out the lights. It was one of the most horrible nights of my life. I just can't do roller coasters, or Ferris wheels, or the like. I can barely do bumper cars. Meanwhile, my whole family was there for the Capital One Bowl game, and they all had a great time while I was off at appearances and practice. As for the game, it was a strange one. Michigan had a good game plan. They rolled up over 500 yards of offense with Chad Henne at quarterback in what was Coach Carr's last game. And the 41-35 loss we suffered was a disappointing way to end our season. With an ending like that, there was no denying that we had work to do. It had been an up-and-down season in which we beat two of our three arch rivals, Tennessee and Florida State. We had some great games and won some great awards, but overall, there was a little bit of emptiness and regret because we knew we could have done much better. We knew we left some wins on the field, and it left a lot of reasons for all of us to move into the next offseason with a brand new motivation to be the best that we could possibly be. Personally, even though it had been a thrill to win the Heisman and the other awards, our not having a better season as a team diminished the luster. I would continue to work hard, as always, and continue to cast a vision for the other guys, and I was hoping it would connect with the guys in 2008 in a way it hadn't in 2007.